Okay. Let's first go around and do intros. That way we just match the rest. Why don't you start?
I'm Tom Rutledge.
Terry Tina.
Stephanie Wordstro.
Frank Post.
Holden Karnowski.
Ari Herman.
Tim Ogden.
Lindy Miller.
Ellie Hassenfeld.
Alexander Berger.
And Greg Jensen will be joining us very shortly. Okay, so first let's just some of the formalities. I mean, we put together an insurance review. That's something that our bylaws require. We changed our insurance. I think we got some more, so now we're spending a few $1,000s a year on insurance. We have general liability because we're in an office. The other stuff, I don't actually think there's action items on these other things. This is just a roster of officers and directors and restatement that we have like appropriate compensation arrangements. So I think this is a good time for people if you have questions about anything bylaws related, formality related, insurance related, or is everyone just feeling good about that stuff?
Or eating pizza.
One of the two. Okay, so we move to eat pizza. Okay, so should we move on?
There's no decision required, right?
There's nothing. This is like really like, this is an FYI. If you guys have any questions, it's a good time to ask them. Okay, just want to make sure.
Do you anticipate changing insurance based on the result of the global catastrophic research?
I think we should get a discount for reducing global catastrophic risk. Okay. The next step is the budget. So the budget the budget was still pretty small in 2011. We did run over our budget, not by like a ton. We broke down the reasons for that. We're definitely growing a lot. Our 2012 budget is bigger, and our 2013 budget is much bigger if we do the hiring we want to do and we hold on to all those people. So that, I think, is worth addressing. We've bumped up a lot of categories, but those don't end up mattering a ton. So things like travel, we're allocating a lot more potential budget to travel. And that's because we have a lot more people, and we have a lot more opportunities to have important meetings that require travel. It's become a bigger part of what we do to visit charities, both in their offices and on the ground. So we've definitely, kicked up a lot of those categories, but the main thing driving the expansion in expenses is employees. And basically where we are is we actually have six people right now. One of them is on kind of a trial run. We have two people who have accepted offers and will be starting in the summer. And then we are still interviewing people. I mean, we went to career fairs, we've got a bunch of resumes, and we're still interviewing people, and I think we would, if we saw the right people, I think we would be open to hiring up to, like, one to two more, although we may not. I think they would have to be, at this point, they would have to be kind of, like, outstanding, in our opinion, for us to hire them. I think we expect some turnover. We expect not every single new hire to work out. But we think, hey, last year we were pretty good with seven people over the summer. This year we're on pace to be eight if everyone stays, and if we hired a couple more, we'd be nine or ten. And we generally have felt swamped for a long time. It's been a very long time since we felt we had kind of an employee who was like pretty good, who we couldn't make good use of. So we feel this is like an appropriate direction, and we think we can raise the money. I mean, our revenue projection does include two institutions. You can never count on institutions, but it's still a pretty conservative projection because there's a lot of people that I think would give us more if we asked for more. And just to clarify on the institutions, I mean, the way I separated that was not, like, who's technically an institution, like, who has a foundation. It was just an institution means, like, they have their own process and an application, and it's like we could lose that support just because there's a change of staff or structure. So someone who might have an institution or a foundation, but, if there's a relationship with the person, it's just different. Not that it's an individual. So we have, in this document, we have a summary of the 2011 budget. We ran a little over budget, not a lot. We explained why that was. Of course, our revenue is way over budgeted, so we ended up with a surplus. Then we have this projection of revenue. This is something people asked for last time we did a budget review. They wanted to know where the revenue is coming from. So I broke it down. And like I said, this institution is the kind of thing where we could lose them just because of a structural change, but we think we will get both of them this year. And then we broke everything down into, like, type and chunk. And, you know, as you can see, I mean, there's definitely a small number of, relatively small, like, 7 donations accounting for, like, 2/3 of the projected revenue. But a lot of the remaining stuff is a larger number, and, you know, I think it's not too, it's like, somewhat robust. And the final sheet is our projected expenses. And like I said, we're planning to hire a bunch of people. Because of that, our projected expenses get really high at the end of the year, and so we don't hit our reserves policy. And, you know, I mean, we project a slight surplus for 2012, and 2013 would be a different ballgame because we'd see what revenue came. So that's the story of the financials.
The projected revenue is for GetWell. Management expenses.
Well, operations.
Operations, right.
This is all operations. I've excluded everything to do with grants and, you know, money moved.
And so this is includes all of GiveWell or non-GiveWell labs, like charities, the ready, what is site visits?
We haven't done any separation of GiveWell and labs for this budget. Site visits is like, you know, going to visit charity or a giving opportunity.
What's the
versus
surplus?
Other travel.
What?
Site other travel is like we went to
registration conference.
Yeah, other, just any travel, and site visits are specifically to visit the charities we're considering.
One of the kinds of travel that we're thinking of ramping up is kind of, we went last year, we went to Seattle twice to see the Gates Foundation. That's the kind of thing we would do again if there was a good reason. Also, I think like San Francisco, we could see ourselves going there more because I think, you know, there's a lot of potential philanthropists there are potentially open to what we do, and they're worth networking with if we can.
What's the surplus or cash balance right now?
The reserves are, this doesn't say what they are at this moment. This does say what they'll be at the end of the first quarter, which is actually is this moment. So this budget is all done as of year end 2011.
You have a slightly older version of the document that you're putting out.
Oh yeah, so it's 720.
It's okay. It's still basically.
I
forget. So when does the trigger get? When does the?
So the rule is. It's actually really easy to see on the sheet because if you just look at the last two rows, that's it. I mean, if at every point the third row is the second to last row is greater than the last row, then we have a surplus that is granted out.
So the goal of the policy is to say, like, we don't want to be in a position where we could just build up cash on, you know, without end. And so we have a policy that prevents us from doing that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we want to be, like, reasonable about what we're projecting and not put ourselves in a position where we have a cash problem. So the policy itself is that we project having a year's worth of reserves at every point in the next year. And if we project falling below a year's worth of reserves, then we would grant money out. So in the coming year, if you're looking at paper attachments, which is not exactly the same as the attachments on screen, in the second quarter, we project having, at the end of the second quarter, having $660,000 of reserves while projecting $700,000. So if everything happens the way we expect, we'll have less than a year's worth of reserves at the end of June, and so therefore we're not in the position now where we would grant funds.
And just so you guys know what's actually going on with that reserves policy, I mean, the way it's actually playing out right now is that when we feel like we have enough money, we just don't raise money as aggressively. And so what actually happens is it's almost more, you know, it's like each donor makes their own decision, but a lot of donors are kind of like, I'm less interested at the point where you're projecting a balanced budget. If you're projecting a deficit, I'll give. If you're projecting a balanced budget, I won't. And so there's a lot of people who, like, might give to support our operations if we had a deficit, and because we don't, they give to our top charities. And so, you know, people could say, well, your reserves policy is never getting triggered, but in a more informal way, what's happening is that we're just not taking in money because people are asking us, do you really need this? And we're saying, well, here's our situation, and they're saying, sounds like you don't really need it. And we're like, yeah, go ahead, give to our top charities.
Is that how you'd handle it if you lost one of the institutions or one of the very big donors?
I mean, it's
big enough. There are enough people right now that you anticipate would be willing to give more that it wouldn't be a game-changing.
Yeah, and it's the same place a year ago, that's the place we were in, that we anticipated a lot of falling revenue, and so we went to a few people and said, here's our funding gap. And if you go to our annual plan from 2011, you'll see we projected a $75,000 funding gap or $70,000 funding gap, and we just
we met some new people, but we also went to old people who had been following us and said, here's our situation. If we need it, will you fill the gap? They very quickly said yes, and then we were able to know that we had the money that we needed.
And every individual is different. So we went to a bunch of people, and some of them said, yes, I'll just give more to you. I commit that now. And others were like, come back to me in December and let me know where you are. So we came back to them in December, and we were like, well, we're fine. And they gave it to our top tier. So it's, you know, it's really what individuals are comfortable with. And so I think our reserves policy these days is ending up being pretty irrelevant because a lot of individuals would just rather give to our top charities at a point that's well short of that getting triggered, and we're fine with that.
And in an event where we had a huge December and money came pouring in, we wouldn't just sit on it. We'd go to our top charities.
And that roster you had of donors by giving categories, that's sort of representative of how many of those people there are?
Yeah.
Like a half dozen or a dozen people or something?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also growing over time. I mean, there's people who gave for the first time in 2011, and we wouldn't obviously have asked them last year, and now some of them have been following the project longer, and they get added to the list.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is roughly where we stand today.
I mean, this is just done by me going manually through anyone who gave more than $2,000 unrestricted and just saying, what do I think they're going to give in the next year or two? And then for under $2,000, I just didn't want to do the work, so just put that as one category. The bottom. Oh, it's not on here. Man, this is like an old version.
We have it on the
okay.
What are the printouts? Here's what you forwarded yesterday, right?
This must be like a draft I sent to Ellie that I forwarded to you.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah,
that must be a little less.
Other than office space, are there any other sort of incremental expenses for having more employees?
Travel goes up. And I think we're budgeting reasonably for that. I mean, another thing to keep in mind is, like, when you just look at the expenses, I mean, a lot of this stuff, like, we tried to bump up travel miscellaneous to the point where it's more reasonable. They're all higher than they used to be, but they're still not, like, an overwhelming part of the budget. So we're not afraid to overshoot. We overshot last year and won't, like, make a huge game-changing difference.
Are the people you're hiring coming to New York?
Yes.
Can you tell something about them or not?
Sure.
I mean, it's two Yale grads, one is an almost Yale grad, who's a senior now, and the other graduated in 2011 and has been working on a project in Africa this year. But, you know, we've had a lot of resumes come in, done a lot of interviews, and both of them really stood out, and we're really excited about them starting. Mm-hmm. They're coming on in the summer.
What is it? If you plan, like, have you guys found any challenge in hiring, or has it really been you just get too many people? Because I'm thinking about over the course of the year, you think you may have to hire more.
I mean, I would say the biggest picture of the challenge has been that, you know, we have wanted to hire people tomorrow for the last 9 months, and we've had the best luck when we've gone with college grads, and we have to wait until July for them to be available. Mm-hmm. So now we feel pretty good, and we just would like, if we found one or two other people that really knocked our socks off, well, I think we have a spot for them. So, you know, overall, I think it's gone well, and, you know, we're not in a great position, though, to, like, hire two additional people in January of 2013. Like, that would be a challenge, and we might have to wait till another year.
And we also wouldn't be that comfortable going much beyond the plan for how big we're going to get. I mean, we want to, you know, see how things go when we get a little bigger and whether we can manage it. So we wouldn't want to be 20 people.
Were there more than these two people that you interviewed? Or were these the only two that have all these people you evaluated and you thought?
We made one other job offer, and it wasn't accepted. The guy had another pretty exciting opportunity. But of the rest, I mean, we probably saw like 100 resumes, more, like 150 resumes, and 75 people have sort of completed these initial assignments that we asked people to do just as a basic screen, and then we maybe interviewed 20 or so, and these are the two that stood out. Or there were three that stood out, and two of them are coming over to us.
Nothing new up there, but I think I've got some
great
documents.
That looks more up to date. Why don't you go up a page?
Last page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the good one. That one. That's the good one. Okay.
And I'm presuming good is better than decent?
Yes. But just, it's only describing their likelihood of renewal, not like their morals.
And in terms of, like, succession planning, you guys are still planning to stick around for a while?
Yes.
Okay. At least through this meeting.
I'm not so sure, but... yeah, we have no plans to leave.
Okay.
So we need to vote on the 2012 budget, right?
Yeah, we should. We should formally approve the budget. That's what we're gonna. That's gonna be the budget figure you see in a year that compares to what we actually spent. So. No, we don't. We have a quorum. We can do whatever we want.
Should we vote?
Yeah.
Okay. I vote in favor.
Me too.
Thank you.
Me too.
That's a majority. I didn't hear from you though.
I always like to wait, given when they notice when I voted. Plausible deniability.
They were nervous.
Tim Ogden approves.
Okay.
We didn't call that amen to anybody.
Unanimous approval.
Now we get into the stuff that is potentially, could take more time and that we wanted Greg to be involved in. We could wait, we could do general Q&A, or we could just, I think it probably makes sense to just enjoy.
Fred, do you want to check again?
Fred, do you want to
do it? I will do a check.
Okay, let's just chill until you're
ready. He's going to check the same room. If he's not in the same room, she doesn't look like he is.
It's always important to have one role on the board that's a Greg finder.
That's a what?
A Greg finder.
I really like this table. This was something we talked about at the last meeting of just like where is the funding coming from and how robust are our funding sources, and it certainly helps me like picture what's going on with our operating budget better than I could before. So you don't have two. I mean, the thing you don't put on here at all is 2011 randoms, right?
Yeah, I don't do anything with randoms. All I do is I manually pick out the people who I think are going to give.
Right. So this is an aggressive estimate because we're assuming that the good and decents repeat, and we by no means is everyone a sure thing, and it's conservative in that it's assuming zero donations from people who we didn't already know, and that is obviously, that is unlikely to occur because it
I
hasn't
just
ever
don't understand
occurred.
On the number when it says 40,000, 2012 only, zero. Does that mean next year you don't?
Oh, that's probably just a goof. The number is one. Yeah, there's one institution. We expect $40,000 in 2012, and we don't expect it to repeat after that.
And like the number next to next.
Yeah, I think I just put those in.
Like,
yeah, it should be. I think I just put those in at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it should be a bunch. Maybe 100.
Yeah.
I thought we were talking about the line. So those items are excluded from the bottom line figure, and that's something, the bottom line figure does not include the 40K since 2012. It's just like how much, conservatively do we think is recurring. There's multiple ways in which actual revenue will probably be higher. One is that, those under 2K people, I didn't look at who they were and whether they'll repeat, but probably some of them will repeat. And then there's going to be like random new people that aren't even projected in here. And then if you go to the projected budget, the number we have instead of 596 is 636 because it just includes the 2012 revenue.
He gave a 10-minute update, which could mean anywhere from 10 to probably 30 minutes.
Okay, well, let's get started on the annual review. And I don't think it's the end of the world if he just kind of misses most of this, comes in, asks whatever questions he has, and then we stay after with him to give him the labs update. Because I think what we're trying to do anyway is more, focus on research with our updates and threads. Okay, so year in review. I think we should go around and say, everything so far, it's like we've gone through the documents as we've been here. You didn't have to read them at all. But I think people should say what they've read of the annual review, because that was a lot of reading, and that was definitely highlighted as something that people should read. I've read it all and wrote most of it. So, no, half of it.
Nothing
of the
Peleon.
What?
Nothing of the
Peleon. I think it's half and half.
He's always trying to steal my thunder.
I read the whole review.
I read it.
You read it all, Sam?
I think I read it cautiously. I thought I read the whole thing, so I'm a little nervous that by the number of pages that you described that I might have missed some links and things like that.
There was one sentence that I really hope you didn't miss.
I read it all since you published it and skimmed it in the
past. Great.
I read all 50 pages that you sent to us, so that's not rigorous as I
recommend.
Oh,
dang. Okay. So it sounds like everyone's pretty much read everything. Did we miss anything? Okay. So, bottom line, we think we had a really good year. we have planned for next year, for this year, that continues, and I know we've had a lot of conversations about this, continues the focus on research, research first, at least in theory. One of the things that's happening this year is we've had some really good outreach opportunities, so we've taken them, and so we've spent a lot of time in outreach so far this year, for sure, a lot of time. So, I mean, that's kind of how we work, is like if we, you know, it's the low-hanging fruit strategy. If we see something really good, we take it, and otherwise, we're trying to focus as much as we can on research. So, I mean, that's kind of the hypothesis that we're putting forward, so what do you guys say?
On the outreach opportunities you've had, are these more promising than outreach opportunities in the past that have been somewhat disappointing? What distinguishes them?
I mean, you know, basically these have been opportunities to kind of meet people in Silicon Valley who really are going to be able to give away a lot, but who are also a little early in their career and not fully committed, and meet them in a setting where they're likely to really pay attention to us. It's, you know, been a function of the intro or the event, or, you know, I went to a conference that was just, I was on a panel, and it was, like, a very well-run conference, and so people paid attention to the panels. So, you know, I think we've been happy with those opportunities, and, you know, basically feel like we're meeting people who could be really substantial in terms of their ability to donate, their ability to help us network, and in terms of their openness.
The biggest difference, I think, between what we did before and what's going on now is just, you know, whether we're being pulled in to potentially, you know, with the thought that these are particularly good opportunities for GiveWell and who our potential market is, as opposed to in the past when it was more of a, like, push strategy to, like, trying to get with anyone who would potentially, potentially be interested. And so, you know, it's still kind of early, and so it's hard to say how, you know, what the returns have been and to those activities, but they certainly, at this point, seem a lot more valuable than what we had done in the past.
And, yeah, I mean, another, like, meta point I think that we're seeing is, like, we've always had this kind of feeling that two good industries for GiveWell are finance and kind of, like, Silicon Valley-style software. And, you know, the reasoning has kind of been people tend to think in certain ways that match what we think in various ways, and people also tend to have a lot of money. And I think what we've been finding, like, we have a feeling, but it's early. We don't really know. Like, we don't know where all these contacts are going to go, where these things are going to go. But we're kind of having a feeling that, like, the Silicon Valley culture and mindset is, like, actually better for us relative to finance than we had thought. And it takes work to make that work, and partly it takes the right contacts and the right introductions, and partly it takes us working on our message in a way that it comes across in the terms that people are used to thinking. So we've had to put in that work, whereas with finance it was very natural to us because we knew people already and we already spoke the language. But once we have the right context and we put in that work, we feel like the fit is actually seems to be quite a bit better. And so that's just a note that we're noting.
Something that jumped out at me when I was reading all of this is, you know, we've been talking about marketing for a long time. I think Tom and I were really advocating for better outreach, and it seems way less of a priority now. It seems like from a capacity perspective, you guys are sort of at a capacity that's comfortable, maybe even a little bit constrained given what's in front of you this year, and you have the appropriate networks or you're setting them up appropriately. So I actually am not sure that the marketing thing makes a big difference this year.
That's how we feel. I mean, we feel like our main priority is research, and then we want to take the outreach opportunities or marketing opportunities that seem like really high value.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas I didn't feel this way a year ago when we were in this room. Like, I sort of now feel more comfortable with that.
And there's a lot, you know, a lot of
demonstrated success.
Right.
So.
Right. I mean, in a lot of ways that are hard to predict, our research is our marketing, and being able to really impress someone is, you know, for the kind of audience we go for is like the most important thing. You know, so I also think that we have, you know, we're thinking about long-term projects of kind of, you know, influencing how the next generation of philanthropy gives, and we think if we have, you know, if that's coming along, then it's not like we need to get real myopic about how many website hits we get every year, although we'd like to see those numbers go up.
Well, and that's, of course, like the second part of it, which is that the growth has been there
in
dollars moved and in website traffic. And so
that's
also, you know, if any of these things were fundamentally different, we might be reaching a different conclusion,
sure.
But everything is lining up.
And I guess one thing that also I want to make sure you know, we've been able to attract, I know, like 50, 55 people who are giving at a higher level. But I think it's important for the organization to still appeal to the broad base. So clearly you want to target people who have high capacity for giving, but you also want to appeal to the average person. So you're doing that on the website. I think next year we'll be good at demonstrating sort of the sustainability of this. This could have been an amazing year where you attracted a lot. So I'm looking forward to sort of seeing how that happens. But I just want to make sure it doesn't become too focused on individuals and so the web still is a major
story. Yeah, and we're still, like, all of the metrics that we have used in the past, we continue to use. And we were just talking today that, you know, we have to post our quarterly metrics update early next week because we'll finish the first quarter and we'll be looking at things like number of donors through the website and web traffic.
So far this year is shaping up
similar
growth.
Yeah. I mean, the
similar
big growth.
That's
similar growth. Yeah, I mean, basically all the big, most of the big stuff happened in December, so it's hard to predict what will happen. In the past, what has happened throughout the year has predicted the big donors, you know, a little bit slower in growth. And the first 3 months of this year are keeping up that same, you know, a little bit more than doubling in terms of dollars and people.
And money moves, you guys think of that not only in terms, because I sort of joined after that whole money moves thing came into being. You guys think of that not only in terms of dollars, but also, I know you think of it in terms of number of donors, not the money move part, but you do consider number of donors on those basis.
I think the transparency theme is something that really ties together, hopefully, the model that is appealing to the bigger donors and also just, you know, the ability to communicate with a lot of people. I mean, hopefully that's still kind of at the center of everything.
The transparency thing is very much at the center of everything. I mean, I think that's a lot of the part that we want to be playing up with the, you know, with more of the Silicon Valley crowd.
So how's the pitch different to that crowd?
I mean, we could talk all day about how it's different. We're still working on it, but it's just emphasizing different aspects of what we do, and you know. But I would say in some ways it's like maybe less of an emphasis on maximizing cost effectiveness because, you know, a lot of the times in that industry it's not so much about knowing what every dollar is going to do. It's kind of taking these, you know, these big bets. And I think there's a bigger emphasis on like transparency and kind of, you know, taking the way that people do philanthropy and looking at how it could be better and done in a new way that's just, you know, new and better. So I think that sound right?
I have two questions about outreach, and they're kind of contradictory, but...
Yeah.
The first one is, do your top charities have $15 million each in funding gap or total?
Each.
Each. So if you've identified $30 million in room for more funding, and you're moving $5 million in room for more... You're moving $5 million a year. Should your first priority be outreach over research, given that gap?
I still think that our research is our best outreach, is like a lot of my answer to that. And so the better the giving opportunities, the more we know about them, the more we learn about past giving opportunities and how they've gone. That's all research. I just like what we found consistently is that our best success is by like building something really good and people recognize that it's good, and because they think it's so good, they spread the word. And it's a certain audience that works that way. That's the audience we know how to communicate with. And so, you know, playing the normal games that charities play, it's like we don't really know how to do it and we've never had much success with it, but we've had success just really focusing on the research and then taking the low-hanging fruit on outreach. Does that make sense?
And it's partially just that, I mean, we also look at the two things, research and marketing, or outreach. And in research, there's all of these things that we really want to investigate that might be really outstanding, not only because they would increase the amount of room for more money move that we have, but because they're better than what we have so far. And just the core thing that GiveWell does is try to find more effective places to give. And if we don't fully investigate those, I feel like we wouldn't be doing our jobs. As well,
we might attract different audiences too.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to ask the opposite question: are you spending too much time on outreach? You talked about the beginning of the year. You spent much more time than you expected, and are you spending too much time on it? And do you plan to rebalance?
It's a real risk. It's like it's hard to do this because it's like we get an opportunity that's just like so much better than the other opportunities we've had. We feel like we have to try it, and we feel like we have to do it right, which means not only flying to wherever you're flying and spending whatever time, but also preparing and getting the pitch right. Like you don't want to do that stuff halfway. It would have been you know, for, to use the example, would have been horrible if I was, like, up on a panel at this great conference and just didn't quite have my pitch together, but I had it completely together. Greg, you want to introduce yourself?
Perfect.
Good.
Ken, how are you?
Good. We unfortunately, you have been too late to the meeting to catch some of the formalities in the budget review.
That's terrible.
Yeah. But we...
Okay.
We're now doing the annual review, so we're just discussing, you know, how things went. Did you read any of the... Okay. Well, want to give... It was a good year. It was a good year, and our focus... Like, it was a good year in terms of our money moved. You know, continue to grow at that kind of good rate of doubling or tripling, in this case, a triple. It's, you know, a little over $5 million was the figure for 2011 total, and that includes the GiveWell Labs pre-commitments. And then we, you know, there was a bunch of other good things that happened, for sure, including the launch of GiveWell Labs. And over the next year, our main priority continues to be research. GiveWell Labs continues to be, like, kind of the top priority, although not the main time allocation. We've been talking about this question of, like, how we decide which outreach to do, because early this year we had what we considered a couple really outstanding opportunities to go, like, make our case to people in Silicon Valley who we think could be receptive but who are also very networked and really able to give and have not started giving yet. So they're not committed. It's not too late. So we took those opportunities. They were a lot of work. We didn't only spend the time, but we spent a lot of time preparing, because we found that we really have to pitch things differently when we talk to those people. And so kind of the question, and one of the views we're forming is that, you know, we've always thought that that crowd plus finance would be good crowds for us, but now we think that crowd is probably better than finance for us, at least when we pitch it right and meet people with the right intros and in the right context. So now we're talking about whether we do too much outreach. And I think there's a strong possibility, because basically we get these opportunities that are better than any other opportunities we've had. We want to do them. We also want to do them right. That means a lot of preparation. We feel like they've been worth it so far.
I mean, I was going to answer your question kind of differently, which is that, you know, we plan to focus mostly on research this year. That's our top priority. In mid-February, Holden and I realized that we had, you know, been allocating more time than we expected to outreach, because as we've grown, outreach activities that a year ago would have been like a slam dunk that you take them, now we have more of those, and so they're not necessarily that top tier. And so we then proactively, like, dial down the
right
things we'll consider. Of course, like, good opportunities keep coming up, and so we still might be making the wrong judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But the main approach we've taken thus far is to say, like, if it's something that was close to the line before, now it should be below the bar of what we take, and we should only be taking those things that are really outstanding, because we seem to get sufficient number of those.
Okay, so old question.
Yeah.
Does it make sense to have more outreach marketing resources?
Well, we have thought a lot about that, and that was one of the types of people we were thinking about hiring. And at this point, we talked to some people who we think have good advice on this specific topic, and we agreed that we weren't going to be able to hire the person with devoting a reasonable amount of resources, that person would not require so much of our time that it wouldn't really be saving our time.
Right.
Now, there is this question of, like, well, it's going to take anyone time to understand GiveWell and get in the fold, and if you want someone 2 years from now, you've got to hire them now.
Yeah.
But I think we're still enough in a, like, we really need to be focused on research and not getting pulled into outreach, that's not a pressing priority today.
Well, and there's another aspect to it, which is that the outreach work that needs to be done today is a lot of it is about crafting the message and making the contacts, and that's something that you really cannot outsource. And if you want to bring in someone, once you have that more, like, down to a science and you know what pitch it is, you also have your contacts. Because, like, right now, I mean, it's like the people we're meeting, it's like they are not going to be interested in meeting anyone other than the co-founder. You know, some of them. And so, you know, that's what you have to do. I mean, that's how a lot of founders spend a lot of time pitching, because that's how a lot of those investors are.
Particularly in software markets you're pursuing, it's
right,
all about the founder,
right,
not about the
right
institution. So.
Right.
So that being said, to the point that comes up later, is thinking about this mid-range stuff. You know, if there's nothing in the middle, there's for people who want, okay, here's the charity, just give to it, or here's the people who want to read 30 pages about why.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the middle. That would seem an obvious place where a relatively cheap resource could start creating that without needing a lot from you guys?
That's the question. I mean, we could debate the question offline, but that is exactly one of the specific things we thought about, and we don't think that's the case, that we could, with a reasonable amount of time, find someone that could do that without asking too much of us. And I think that's because, like, the communicating the message that we want at that summary level is difficult.
So is there an opportunity for some of the analysts to gain more of a experience?
We've experimented
on some of that role.
I think so, and we've experimented with that a little bit. But I mean, again, it's about continually raising the bar. Like, we, you know, we look at what's going on right now and all the things we have to do, and we feel like we're a little bit spending more time on outreach than we expected, and so now we're slammed with all this stuff, and we've got this item on the list that's like, you know, make an intermediate level of detail for our website, but just isn't very high on the list right now.
Is there a way to test demand for that stuff? You know, it's plausible to me that would be a really great thing, and it puzzles me that that's actually the middle of the market where no one is.
I think it's much more likely to be the latter just because of how people seem to use our website. I don't know. Maybe Ellie,
like, the way I can tell you, like, you know, we put this in our, it's the full detailed metrics report that links from the annual review. And so we asked the 60 or so biggest donors how they use our research, among other questions. And the common story was, I found you guys at some point in the last few years. I spent a lot of time at one point vetting your research to see if I found it credible, if you guys seem smart. And now I follow along with the blog and I give to your top charities. And I'm not reading every detail. Now, there is some demand for that intermediate level because we have donors who are big who say, I can't even tell you what the schistosomiasis control initiative does. And I gave them a significant amount of money. And I would really like to know why that is your top charity. And so that is a person that we would serve. I think it would certainly, you know, help that type of person spread the word about GiveWell, that they're, you know, they're struggling. And so, but it's just this thing of, well, it's a whole project to do that, and it's to come up with that intermediate level of detail, create that information in a way that works, and we are capacity constrained right now.
I had a quick note for Greg, just that I want to get out there as soon as I can. GiveWell Labs, we did an update on the train for everyone, except you and Fred. On like what the status of that is research wise, and we'd like you to stay after me too if you want and give the same update to you guys. And so if you're constrained about like when you can stay after, I think it'd be good to like be aware of that and coordinate to the extent we need to.
Pretty constrained.
Okay. When do you have to go?
I don't know about that by itself, but I've got it. It's probably not going to be tonight. I don't think it's going to make a lot of sense. I do want to hear about it, and I'm
okay.
Feel very behind here, but I don't think tonight's going to work.
Okay. Do you know what time you have to go?
Well, I'm probably going to leave at 8.
Okay. Alright. Okay, so that's, anyway. So other questions on 2011?
Kim, if you have other, like, just questions or thoughts on this topic, you know, we can talk more about what we thought about it, what we're thinking.
It just sounds like it's something we have to, at the next board meeting, sort of hear back from you guys as to how.
Well, we're not planning. I mean, we're not planning to pursue this priority.
I'm not talking about that. Sorry, I'm talking about the outreach balance and whatever, because you have a lot of things coming up. You're attending more conferences and whatnot. So.
I mean, I have questions. I just don't know if they're exactly appropriate for now. You can just tell me if they're not. Like, I thought it was interesting, the update on Village Reach.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see, unless I was looking quickly, whether or not there had been much reply, like, or other people, you know, commenting on your updated research on Village Reach, which showed some, like, I took it as there were some bumps in the road, but they're still transparent,
mm-hmm.
and we still like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see if there was a lot of, like, a lot of people have given a bunch of money in the last few years to that, whether or not that message was taken the same way by the, like, donors that had picked this as the top charity and are, like, that seems kind of core to how I bet you would evolve. Like, you're new, doing this research, you're going to build up, you're going to learn that some of the things that you thought were great early may not be, and that's part of the evolution,
mm-hmm.
whether or not there's been any feedback from donors related to that. I didn't see any replies to
There weren't any replies to the post. I mean, we have some, like, anecdotes where, you know, we've been working on putting this update together for a little while, and so we've certainly talked to people in the past. And we have
a donor that was considering giving, and we like sent him a draft so he could look at it before he made his gift. And the consensus, like pretty much from everyone that we talked to about it, was that like Village Reach has some bumps in the road. They're still transparent. I still want to support them. This makes sense. Like you guys are following up and figuring out whether this worked or failed, and you're putting it out there in public, and that's really what is most important than whether our pick in 2009 was the best possible pick we could have made. But
are they still donating?
Yeah, and I mean the one guy who was actually making decisions still wrote a big check to Village Reach. But I mean, I think it's a fair point. It's interesting. It's something we should check.
Right. Seems like a good stress test of people's views on you guys, mostly,
right,
and the fact that they put their faith in you in 2009. And
yeah,
this is what it's going to look like. Like there's going to be things like this that come up, and so.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little worried that, you know, that people would be like, I gave to your charity because I thought it was like the most proven thing ever. And so if it's not working, then you guys just suck. But we haven't heard any of that, and I've brought this up with a lot of people informally because I want to see how they feel about it. And it just, I don't know, like a certain kind of person is drawn to give well, I think, and I think that person is just like, you know, is on the same page as us. It's hard. There's not a lot of transparency. You can't assume that things are going to be good. And so, you know, if things are not going so well, but you're finding out, that's probably a good thing. Been the attitude I've gotten.
But I like the suggestion. I mean, I think it's something I want to check with some more people now that it's out there. And
right, we should be talking more. And we do a lot of, like, donor relations with people who, you know, are kind of semi-big donors. We'll make sure to talk to them. So this is something we can add into that script.
What is out there? You mean the out there is the stuff that you're putting out there, you mean?
Yes.
Or referring to out there in some other way.
We're putting it out there. We do an update on Village Reach, and we, you know, publish a bunch of stuff on how we think it's going, and how we think it's going has got some problems, and it's all coming from us. And I think that's a key factor.
I mean, it's coming from us just because they are very open and they share a lot of information with us.
Right. That's good. No, I just was wondering if somebody else was saying that. Okay.
I don't, there isn't really a question on this part, but I find the amount of giving that was reallocated to be a really important piece of data. And more than half of the money that's being given here is money that's being taken from one charity and given to another.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing that gets a lot of attention.
So far it hasn't, but I agree with you. It was an interesting data point. It was somewhat surprising
Sometimes mainstream media doesn't read the fine print of our metrics reports, which is strange.
Well,
yeah.
So I mean, some of that is, you know, who you talk to and how you say it specifically to those people. It's not clear to me the value of doing that, right? But I can see, for instance, if I call Carolina Chronicle of Philanthropy and show her that number and then the age breakdown of the donors, Chronicle of Philanthropy will find that really interesting and newsworthy. I just don't know that we care.
Don't know if we care.
Age Chronicle of Philanthropy.
Yeah, I don't know if we care either.
Right.
Well, I can tell you my thoughts on that. Well, I can tell you what, I mean, I care about this number for a couple of reasons. Like, one, the value of the money move that GiveWell has is how much money we move and how much better our charities are than where it would have otherwise gone. And a lot of the money would have gone to other charities. You know, not everyone answered with a specific organization, but the broad theme of the reallocated money was big name international NGO, CARE, MSF, World Vision, Save the Children. And, you know, we certainly think the charities we recommend are a lot better, and there's big incentives, reasons for the sector as a whole that think money should be given the GiveWell way as opposed to the old way. But
this is reallocated, just to understand this, this is reallocated from somewhere other than GiveWell to a top charity, not like Village Reach to the new top charity.
We ask people, you gave money to charity.
We ask people,
you gave money to charity this year through GiveWell. Where would you otherwise have given? What would you have otherwise given?
Okay.
So we say, if you gave $100, would you have? So some people say, well, I would have given $50 if I hadn't found GiveWell because I wasn't as confident, and now I gave more. But you know, roughly, more than half of the people of the dollars say, I would have given this money. It just would have gone somewhere else.
Another thing that I think is interesting is the age breakdown. Like I think that is something where, if we had a succinct way to communicate that, I think charities would find our money move number more impressive given the age breakdown.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting people that age to give in those amounts. That
you know, that's the big nut that all charities are trying to crack, is how do you get people under age 50 to give money? And none of them have been successful, other than, say, Charity Water giving people only give $2.
Right.
But that model hasn't replicated anywhere. So I do find this really interesting, but the other thing on that chart that I think is interesting and worth thinking about strategically is, on path, GiveWell will quite likely pass Charity Navigator this year.
In
terms of
website,
very specific
money
that goes
through
the website.
Right. Money transit, dollars processed through the website is that measure.
I think that's likely a significant tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what?
Where, you know, broad recognition, starting to see the behavior change that we've talked about,
right,
is that, you know, it actually doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's just sort of one of those signals to people that will quite possibly rapidly accelerate the changing of behavior within the sector, particularly, but also without the sector.
Like the lever, I'm just not sure we're all saying, what I'm hearing, what you're saying, I'm not sure it's what you're saying, is that that using the lever to change the charity's behavior, right? That's the first lever, is the point of, like, why not put a blog post on that? And that's the basic.
On what? On the age range? On the Charity Navigator thing?
Well, probably both, but let's say that, no, before that, the first point that I made, which was the, hey, people are changing how they're giving money, and they're giving money to charities that are of this nature, that have these kinds of things, that that it would seem like it would be the right kind of pressure on charities that you want to put in the right way. So, like, pointing out that good thing, and that charities of this that are operating in this way,
right,
are going to get this benefit going forward. As it seems like you would. Accomplishing one of the missions is to get people to think about it differently, to operate differently, to realize that they have a better chance to raise money as charity if they operate in this transparent, measured way.
I mean, we think our money move figure is the simplest, you know, most compelling, like, you know, demonstration of that. Like, charities that behave this way get money. Right, the reallocation point is interesting. So anyway, I'm coming up for a blog post on it.
Well, what about the press release approach, which you did a couple of weeks ago? I mean, this is something that would actually shake people up in the philanthropy world. Maybe that's, you know, maybe then rather than directing them to the blog.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I noticed, it is a small number reallocated. I mean, I just don't know. You know better than we do whether that's something that people will care about, but it's $1 million to, like, collectively from organizations that have gigantic budgets, and it always seems, my instinct is more that the carrot of a couple $1 million or more unrestricted funding is a bigger carrot to change incentives than the fear of losing the money if you don't change.
I don't know. I could see that second thing being a big deal.
Interesting, it's just a kind of anecdotal data point, but somebody was over at our house who's just started working at a nonprofit, and they mentioned, I think Melissa mentioned that I was at GiveWell, and they said we were looking, actually wondering if there's any way that we can get GiveWell to look at us. And I didn't know whether how often you're running into that. Charities looking to get reviewed or get, like, you guys to pay attention to them.
We do run into it. I mean, we try to just kind of put, you know, our goal is to, like, find certain charities that, like, in certain sectors that we think are really promising. And so we kind of tell those charities that we kind of don't want to engage them. And so, like, one thing that we have not been good at and haven't done well is this kind of, like, how can we influence the way other charities and other donors behave who are in other causes that aren't our favorites?
Right.
We haven't done it that well. We have tried a few things to do it. They haven't gone that well. I kind of feel like it's just something that we will eventually figure out how to do, but it's not high enough on our list.
I just want to clarify what Holden said. So there are two things that we do and happen pretty frequently that are on your question. So one is we have a form on our website. And we ask people, charities who want to be reviewed, to submit information about what they do and whether they have information available and whether they're willing to talk to us and whether they're willing to go on the record. And we look at all of those that come in. That doesn't mean that we're going to go, obviously, and spend a lot of time on any of them, but we certainly consider every single one.
Are
and
those mostly U.S.-based charities?
They are, I would say, the average random charity across the spectrum. So they could be anything, regardless of how relevant it is to what we do. But we certainly look at every single one and consider whether it's something that would be promising given our framework. The other thing is when, you know, what's more likely to get our attention and does happen is that a charity reads our website, understands what we're about, and emails us. saying why they think they are a good fit for what we do, and we certainly consider all of those, right? When someone has made
That's what this person was saying, and so I was just trying to, like, that was, I thought, the connection they were making to you, and I don't know if that would ever guide you towards reviewing more.
It's not going to guide us to reviewing U.S. causes unless it was, like, blowing our minds because we have a certain perspective on how valuable our research is on that cause relative to others. But we have a lot of charities every year. We certainly have a number of charities every year that we look at because they understood what we were doing and thought they could make a case that they fit us and they're good for us, and we take a look.
I feel like we're talking about a number of different things here. So we're talking about charities, we're talking about, like, the audience in terms of the donors, we're talking about the audience in terms of sort of the giving world. I think what we're seeing is some interesting information here, and if you guys can think of a way to sort of package it that could perhaps, through a press release or something, just get word out. It's an easy form of outreach. I don't know who the target community is, and that's for you guys to figure out where you need it most. But it is very interesting that over 20% of the money moved to GiveWell is a reallocation on behalf of donors, right? I mean, that's an interesting piece of information. Likewise, that you're targeting young donors, that they're giving a lot. And I think those pieces of information might be useful for you guys somehow.
They're
so I don't know how you're going to use it, but I think you have someone who will help you.
I want to go back to this point really quickly. I just had a question for him on the Charity Navigator point. So you were saying if GiveWell exceeded Charity Navigator in terms of money moved over the website this year, that would be a kind of tipping point. I was wondering if you meant that that would be a sign to us that we're successful, or whether you thought broadcasting that message would itself lead to a tipping point or would be helpful causally.
I think it's the sort of thing that can cause a inflection point in the attention that people give to GiveWell. That this isn't just an interesting experiment for a few people out there. And
people hear that will open their eyes. Basically.
Right.
We were able
like
to
media.
Well,
not just media, but just the charities, the overall
charities.
I
see that.
All this stuff seems to be like the audience here is really the philanthropy world, though. It's people who are savvy about what tends to happen, how charities tend to behave, how their audiences tend to operate. So I think that's the audience we probably want to target. And hopefully, and maybe there's some general interest journalists out there who would write an article, and that might potentially spread beyond that. But it sounds like
that would be pretty.
And they advise donors. I mean,
yeah, I think it's a pretty cool. Like, I agree that you should take advantage of it. It's a pretty good point, and a pretty good. And if you tie that into why,
right?
Like what the difference is, and why you think that's happening. In the way, if you can take the, you have to be careful, I think, about how you express this point, but express the point of who these people are, how they're thinking about charities, like why they're changing, that thoughtful people are doing this, and that's why there's better than Charity Navigator. I think that you could create a lot of momentum from that.
Do you collect this data from everyone who gives on your site, just in terms of their age and is it a reallocation or not?
We collect a lot. I mean, we do surveys to, like, you know, but a lot of people don't fill them out.
But when people give, could you have, like, two buttons that they could check? Just to track this data over time might be interesting.
We try to track some. I mean, we don't
ask
them.
Not just for 55. I'm talking about...
No, I know. We survey everyone who gives. We also don't want to ask too much. We could think about whether we want to... The one, we don't ask age. And that's something we could add in. We do have
do we do the counterfactual survey for everyone now?
Yeah, we do.
The survey that
we
did. I don't think you did. I haven't seen it.
We didn't end up putting those numbers in because, like, we get a very low hit rate on the survey. And it's, like, the people who respond are, I would say, probably not representative in certain ways. And so we looked at these 55 as a better core group to do a reasonable.
Sure, it is a very interesting group. I'm just thinking it's like two extra clicks that people have to make when they give. It could be optional, but it would be interesting as well.
Yeah, we'd certainly like to collect more and better data.
And just one, I think I mentioned this before, but just as for context, I'm fairly sure the number amongst high net worth donors is that 90% of their giving is locked up. So what they gave this year is exactly to the same organization they gave to 3 years ago.
Right. And if you combine that with age, it's like a good... It's true. Like, I think we could... It's like our money move number doesn't capture the full...
It shows how different our target market is than the, like, Hope Consulting survey results.
Right.
It's like totally separate, totally different group of people.
Well, I've noticed it down for blog posts.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee it'll happen anytime soon. There's a lot of blog posts, but I think it'll happen.
I mean, I don't think it necessarily needs to happen now, but when we pass, Charity Navigator, and those numbers still look roughly the same. That
given how the money mood works, it'll probably be around 1 p.m. on December 31st.
Right. And you posted at 1 p.m. because they still have 11 hours.
People are thinking it's the best time for it to happen because people are thinking about actually.
Sure. Definitely. I mean, we will have no clue whether we're going to pass Charity Navigator until then.
And like a press release idea? Not talking about Charity Navigator, but like this information?
Yeah, Kim, can we kind of leave that with you? Think about it a little bit?
We've got a while.
Yeah, I mean, we have it noted down, and Tim will think about it.
Yeah.
So what are the most interesting things that you guys are working on?
What? What are the most interesting things?
I like we're boring you a little bit. I'm just wondering what are the most interesting things that you're working on? Blog posts, thoughts, whatever. Like,
well, the biggest thing that we're working. I mean, the two things that have been consuming all our time lately is one, the outreach opportunities in Silicon Valley and the preparation for that, which is what, and then the GiveWell Lab stuff and the GiveWell Top Charity stuff. So it's like, you know, and the GiveWell update stuff. So. You know, following up on Village Reach, finding out how that's going, following up on AMF and SCI, how those are going, and then, like, digging on new potential top giving opportunities. How good is the literature on nutrition? How good are nutrition interventions? Can we set up a way for donors to support nutrition interventions such as zinc supplementation, iodine supplementation? So that on the GiveWell, you know, top charity side, and then on the GiveWell Lab side, I mean, we have this whole, it's, you know, starting over, and basically we're trying to create a framework for how you know what a good philanthropic sector is and how you should pick a philanthropic sector and a hypothesis for what we think promising philanthropic sectors are and why, and kind of a, you know, a semi-data-driven case for that. And that's going to be just like a ton of writing. Like, we're going to be talking about, you know, all the causes we don't like, all the causes we do like, and why, and how we pick sectors.
Any other questions?
So I have a question about the deep investigation process of sort of charities that we're already recommending. You know, we've had this situation with Village Reach that I think has been handled very well. Exactly what GiveWell should be doing is saying, you know, here's what's happening, here's how it's changing, how it's not. If I'm reading the plans correctly, that process for SDI and other and against malaria is going to be handled by the analyst, not by you guys.
I'm very involved in that stuff, and we're, you know, they're the core, the analysts are the core group of people doing the work, but I'm very involved in checking it, and, I mean, we have, like, periodic audits that we do of the analyst work where we just do it ourselves and make sure, you know, with analysts at different levels of experience with GiveWell that we can rely on what they're doing.
Have you started thinking about what happens if results for SCI and against malaria are equally disappointing? So that,
no.
You know, in the threat category, not against humanity, but against GiveWell, right?
So a couple,
we go for three.
Small potatoes.
I think we shouldn't jump the gun on Village Reach. I mean,
yeah.
I look back at our decision in 2009 and still think.
Let me clarify. I think we've done really well. I don't have any complaints, but from the broader audience, right, who doesn't think deeply about this thing. If FDI is disappointing and against malaria is also disappointing from what we said, that is a potential inflection point in the growth curve.
There's a big difference in kind between Village Reach and AMF and FDI in terms of the type of organization they are. Like, Village Reach had a particular approach to solving a problem, and now they're trying to scale up this, what was all an experimental approach. AMF is delivering bed nets. They, as far as we know right now, have gotten that first layer of bed nets to people. We did an update on that. If the nets don't work or if something goes wrong, the same with SCI, it will say something like much broader is wrong with aid
right.
in general. And while that would be unfortunate in some ways for GiveWell, I think in the bigger picture it's positive because it would be like we are determining that there are these huge problems that beyond what we even thought, that we can't even rely on the most successful causes, the scholars, and the people working on charities that we think are best, and that would just be a bigger deal and a bigger shift that we would have. It would be something we learned and found out, and I think that would be
right.
really
it would demonstrate the value
fair,
of the,
right,
that
the bed nets don't work.
We're hoping they work. Another thing I want to say is like there is
oh,
a
we
way
love
that,
the children.
There is a way that it could be purely bad for us. For example, let's say these charities just turn out to be bad people or something, and they screw up. So it's not that bed nets don't work, and like. I don't know, like, I just, our philosophy is that we, you know, we do things the right way, and if people decide to put put us out of existence than they do, and like that's how we want all charities to operate, and that's how we're going to operate. So, you know, we don't see this as a major risk for the reasons Ellie said, but like I also want everyone to know that we're like, you know, if we make three bad bets and then we find out they were bad, we're going to say they were bad. And then if people decide to stop funding us, then they do.
But there were also some good ones. I mean, there's family partnership, for example. Like, there are some, there's a record.
But there are big, I mean, I think it's right to look at these three. I mean, they've gotten the most money. They're certainly the ones that we have, over time, had the most confidence in. And if we're totally wrong, well, not only do people have to consider what that means for GiveWell, we have to consider what it means for GiveWell.
Right. I mean, one other way to put it, like, you're sort of putting this in threat category. It seems like when you're doing that kind of analysis, like, you're sort of worried about it as a reputational threat. I was really worried about the Village Reach post as, like, a reputational threat. I was, like, kind of worried that people were going to, like, start raining down, like, hate upon us. And we got total crickets. I mean, you commented on this. Like, there's, like, no comments on the blog. Nobody tweeted about it. Like, I think I was, like, the only person in the world who retweeted that tweet. it just got nothing. And I was holding the letter. I remember discussing it. There was, like, a question about, I think, like, people just don't read a lot of our research that doesn't have, like, a giant banner headline that closely. And so, you know, like, we're going to keep posting this kind of stuff. It would be bad if the third, like, update on a major charity was, like, uh-oh, something went wrong again. And, like, maybe you would get more of a reaction at that point.
But this is also, like, the reason
I think it's important to say it's not bad.
Right,
like, I mean,
right.
It is. And then what do we do about it? So bad on what basis? Anyway, it would be really bad if we didn't, in my view. Like, I wouldn't work with this organization if because of reputation we didn't. That's just,
neither would I.
Right. I'm not worried about it for that reason. But I'm just saying, I just want to be clear what's bad and what's not bad. So if it turns out you can't pick good charities, it's not that bad. That's just learning.
And we've selected our audience for people who have that attitude and who have the same. And so that's just something to remember, is that, like, we have aligned things such that we, like, if we start doing things for reputation reasons, it's, like, risky for us in a big way.
Story in which it is risky. Like, we have a single donor who basically has been pinging us over email, like, every 2 weeks, asking us when we're posting our next Village Reach update, because it was longer than we had anticipated. Not because we were trying to hold it back, just because it took us longer to get it out because of other things going on. But we have people like that who want to know, and if we didn't put the information out there, they would be on top of it.
Yeah,
but
they
didn't,
why
do you think
these
people don't actually comment?
Well, they don't have, I mean, they're
not looking to comment or engage, they just want to know.
Maybe they don't have much to say. I mean, with that donor I talked about before, the thing that his response to the Village Reach update when he read the full in detail thing was, wow, you guys have, like, looked at everything. It hasn't gone as well as you thought, but they're really transparent. They're trying to do good things, and they need more money. So I'm happy to give.
People, you guys have selected your audience in a way, but your audience has really selected you. People are into the transparency, and they are rewarding the fact that Village Reach may not be successful always in its outcomes, but it is successful in being more transparent. And I think that's why people like GiveWell. I think what you're talking about is possibly other risks that might be different because the organizations are different, but I think we just have to cross those bridges.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're somewhat misunderstanding. I'm not looking to manage the reputation. What does it say about GiveWell if we go 0-3? It says that our process doesn't work all that well to do what we set out to do,
right?
So that's
well,
the way
it depends, though. I mean, I would just say why, and so that's a difficult thing to parse prospectively, but if it turns out that things are so different, like, to me, that based on what you're describing, it's really not that different than what was totally within the range of outcomes. Like, meaning that when you look at what they were saying about Village Reach and then what happened, you're like, that's totally plausible. I wouldn't consider it a miss in the big way. I would have considered it a miss if it turned out that they had been transparent only to get the money, and then they turned out different. Like, there's different ways you could miss.
And
that would imply different things about your process.
Even if it's 0-3, I think the learning process is as important and will continue to be rewarded. I mean, that's just the hypothesis I have, but I think the donors who would say, oh, shit, none of those three things worked, but, you know, we learned a lot about why things don't work, and GiveWell is providing a lens into that. So I think that will continue to be abused, and we may also have to revise the process.
Let me clarify why I think this matters, is I think there are two possible inflection points that change the trajectory of GiveWell significantly from the path that it's on. One is this passing charity navigator, in which case the slope of the line could go radically up, and so I think we need to be thinking about what happens if that happens, and
you know, I don't think we have to do anything about it right away, but you guys should start to be thinking about what happens if the line goes like this because of an inflection point like that. And what happens if the line goes like this because we go for three? It doesn't mean we shut down and nothing happens, but it could significantly change the trajectory the GiveWell is on because we don't pick up, continue to pick up steam if there's some loss of credibility in the process.
For what it's worth, I don't see those as the main inflection points. I think the biggest positive inflection point is kind of a reputational inflection point where, like, it's a point where you have the right contacts and they introduce you to the right people. People in charity tend to follow each other, and so there's a point at which it snowballs and where you can, you know, especially if you're networking with people who are, you know, the right people, things can take off. I think that's a much more important inflection point. Passing Charity Navigator, I don't think, is going to make a huge difference. It might to charities, but I don't think it would to our money.
The reason for the inflection point is important is being prepared for the contingency.
Sure. So we understand there's inflection points both ways. And I also think that going over for three, I mean, it would depend, again, why it is, but I think the bigger threat to GiveWell would be that we, like, you know, failed on transparency or something.
In a sense, like, the biggest thing I would do to deal with most of those inflection points is, like, continue to do our research and as well as we can and as openly as we can and learn from what has gone poorly historically and, you know, what else would we do? We want to find more opportunities in case we grow. We want to do better research in case we have problems.
Yeah, the more we know, the better equipped we are to handle either situation, which is another argument for research.
A specific question on Village Reach. Given that now, because of that, they're opened up, there's a funding gap now again.
Because of that. There just is. Like, there was no funding gap before the coming year, which is why we...
There was always going to be a funding gap.
There was always
this next
going
year.
To be a funding gap.
I got the sense that they had to pay more.
Their costs have gone up.
Their costs have gone up
be
because of
gap.
The
yeah.
issues that they ran into, and that was part of why the funding gap opened up. And,
right, but there was going to be... But anyway,
so are you going to redo analysis on Village Reach over the course of this year?
We're doing tons of analysis on them, so we'll be positioned to rate them against our other charities and decide who we want to recommend.
Just for addressing.
I think we should see if there are other questions that are, like, really on point, because if Greg has to go at 8, we should get to the final item before we... And then we can come back to stuff. So that's the compensation review. This is why I wanted to get to this item. I want to raise.
You want to just do that now and then come back?
Yeah, let's do that now.
But we should, I mean, we've always had this executive session, so when we leave, or I guess all staff leaves when you guys talk about this.
Yeah. So we're.
Why don't you go?
So before we do
before
that,
we
I guess,
do
any of any questions or.
Well, first,
I guess you should say what
it is. Say what it is. I mean, we're seeking a raise from. Ellie and I are seeking a raise from $75,000 each to $90,000 each. We're not talking about analyst salaries at this meeting. Those are going to be set by us. The totals are in the budget, the approximate totals. You know, we're not trying to be passive aggressive or anything by providing salary survey info. We're just doing that because that's what our bylaws say that we do.
We're trying to give you the context that we reasonably can.
Right. And so we
don't
think
highlighted by the person.
We think this is the right number. We don't want another number. We don't want a higher number. We don't want a lower number. I know there's been some confusion about that in the past. So if anyone has reasons that the number should be lower or higher, I hope you raise them while we're in here. And then otherwise we'll leave.
And this is presuming a change at the beginning of third quarter 2012 based on how I read this budget spreadsheet?
Yes.
Starts July 1st.
Okay.
So one problem is it is going to be difficult to turn off all
so
the
we need it? Well, obviously, do we need an executive session? Do you guys want an executive session? This is just totally, there's nothing I would want to say without them here and nothing I really want to say, period. If any one of us wants an executive session, I think we should do it.
Close our eyes and raise your hand.
I don't. I mean,
no. And I'm in favor of the proposal.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Me too.
Just make sure that it's not required that we have them out of the room to do this on the board.
I can check that while we're talking.
That would be a certain
requirement. We could still walk out
with a good There's a lot of silly requirements in our bylaws, and we're eventually going to start purging them because I think we have to.
Yeah.
Older than Ellie just left the room.
Yeah. Whatever is a formality, we can deal with it in 2 seconds. Some of it like really doesn't make sense, but we'll probably come back to that at the next meeting. Anyway, you guys can keep going. I'll find out if we have to leave the room.
Well, I think we're done, right? That seems reasonable. To me, you guys have done a good job, and I am just to change topics while you're doing this. It's somewhat related to your compensation for some reason. What made you the Silicon Valley versus financing? I know all people in finance are douchebags, but what was
that's pretty much
other,
the reasoning.
Was there any
yeah, that's the thinking. Yeah. No, I mean,
we've known you guys for a long time. What have you done for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the thinking. I mean, we have good contacts in Bridgewater. And I feel like we've been in New York, the finance capital of the world, for 5 years. We have good connections at the world's largest hedge fund, and it's not that we've gotten nowhere, but, you know, we feel that when we've gone out to Silicon Valley with the right intros and the right pitch, which has to be a little bit customized pitch, we just feel like the legitimate intellectual engagement, the interest, how realistic it seems to not only win over individuals, but for those individuals to spread the word to other individuals. I think networking works differently out there in a way that works better for us than it works in finance. So,
well, isn't it startup people are talking to other startup people about all their startups?
Sure, I mean,
it could be different.
I don't know much about the industry. I don't want to get into the details.
We don't.
I have my theories,
but we don't.
But you know, it seems to work differently.
The only question I'd ask is, I don't know much about it.
I'll never know.
Are you guys adequately tapping into like what might be easier, like in the startup community in New York as well? Like it's around the corner as opposed to in San Francisco. And I don't know how to compare the relative things.
I
just don't know it very well.
We're going to look into it. I think it's much weaker. I think it's like maybe not worth the time, but we're going to check it out.
It also just makes a lot of sense.
I know a few people
it's
that have done a few
the whole balance.
Like,
right.
Yeah, I think it makes sense, to be clear.
Yeah.
I think the most finance people are douchebags. I think it makes sense, but I resemble that remark.
We'll have to see if it translates into
right.
money.
We don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this
right.
is all like first quarter.
Right. This is just impressions
this
we're
year.
Sharing with you guys.
Yeah.
We don't know this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
But it's a note when we're thinking about, you know, what do we believe about who's attracted to us and what is that going to make us do? And so that's the hypothesis right now.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time. We can ask it afterwards. We need to do the vote while you're finding the bylaw thing. But
I mean,
is there a plan, like we did last year, like some sort of a Bridgewater connection, like any sort of connection thing?
Yes, we're not planning to do that again. When we looked at the end of the year of like what we thought the returns were from that, they were not that great. And
that doesn't surprise me. Like, it doesn't surprise me partly due to some of the, like, I think misses and how some of the misses, tactical misses on when we were sending, like, the reminders being too late, basically, like some very tactical things. But
so I mean, I would say the way we've thought about that event, and
I don't think it's a major win, but the better like would be figuring out how to connect to the right people in Bridgewater in a good way.
The way that we're looking at it right now, like at a higher level, is like we have finance, which is a sector that conceptually we should be able to do reasonably well in, and Bridgewater is the place in finance that we should do the best because of characteristics of Bridgewater and people we know, and there's all sorts of advantages. And so far, we have really struck out to do well beyond the people that we knew when we were here.
Bridgewater's not a well-networked financial place, I mean
Bridgewater network,
the,
right?
Inside
yeah.
the company,
that's
even
interesting.
With people,
so even so, the people we there were.
We had a good turnout.
Good turnout, but
a lot of people turned out. But so my read on it was a lot of people turned out, but it was like in April-ish, and you've got a lot of young people that don't know anything about Givewell came for a party and to meet people, and then the older people are more in that camp that are like they already have their giving habits and didn't get any great connections, like where like you met somebody that was really intrigued and was a no big donors or something like that came out of it, which was essentially that more like the idea. And then had you been targeting just the like gifts at the end of the year,
right.
needed to be on top of like when to send out. Hey,
we sent out email. I mean,
I remember it being 2 or 3 days late, which I think was like real cost.
I mean, I would put it. I would guess it's not just a like very small tactical problem. It's a like we need to figure out how to engage a group of people in this sector. Bridgewater is the best place to experiment because we have all sorts of advantages and we'll probably be more successful here than anywhere else. Meaning if we can't make it work here, we can't make it work somewhere else. And so that's the place to start. But right now it doesn't seem like the best return to like strategize about how
I
to
particular
people. Then we always want to meet
I didn't think it was that. You say it was a couple days late. Like, to be clear, like it was early December, maybe late November. It was like one or two days past a certain event that, like, makes people give a certain amount that is not a huge amount and is not their main gift for the year.
But can we just start for a second? Because I think we just had a whole conversation about outreach and, you know, your time and everything. And it sounds like you guys have a lot of really good outreach leads right now and that you will be consumed by those leads and you're pursuing them. And possibly other things could happen, but for the moment, I think it's more just a statement that your leads are coming more from the technology sector.
Right.
And maybe, like, if we want to figure out other ways, we can do that offline.
Right.
Unless you think it's core to the meeting.
Did you figure out the executive session thing?
Yeah, we're fine.
So do we actually have to vote, or do we vote?
We do have to vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
Hands up.
All hands up.
All hands up. Good. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Appreciate
yeah, you guys are doing great.
Thanks. Okay. Do you want to adjourn us?
We done?
I mean, is there anything else?
Well, do you want to go back to the review?
We could.
People have questions?
Sure. So we're going to have to set up a separate time with you for a labs update.
Yeah,
it'd be nice if it could be soon because we want to publish where we are and we always like to get, you know,
well, do you guys
like
want to do that for 5 minutes if Greg's here?
Yeah, I'll do
that.
I could do it for 5 minutes.
Okay.
We
could do it with everyone sitting here. We're just going to do it with
everyone sitting here. Yeah, I hear you again. I've heard it like 4 times.
Yeah, no, it's better every time. Okay, so Give-A Labs, as I think you know, I hope you know, is us trying to kind of take away whatever constraints and rules we may have had and just say, how can I spend $1 million, $10 million, whatever, as well as possible. No holds barred. So we're kind of, first important conceptual division is into doing, getting the dollars to the best things available that people already do, or like doing as good work as existing foundations versus trying to do better and do things differently. And I think those have to be completely separate paths and worked on in totally different ways for reasons I'll get into. So on the let's find out what the best stuff is right now and get money to it, there's two main paths we're following. One has been folded into normal GiveWell, which is just saying, let's say there's an intervention, like zinc supplements or iodization, that we think is really good, but we don't know a charity that we can, like, give to, that it'll, you know, work that way, let's create that. And so that means talking to, for example, the Micronutrient Initiative, or GAIN, which is a big nutrition coalition-type thing, and saying, can we set up a vehicle to just, you know, people give into the fund, and then more zinc gets to people in a real way, and it's not kind of a formal way. And so that's one thing that's been, like, folded, and I'm going fast, because, you know, that's been folded into normal GiveWell. And so we're just going after the things we most want people to be able to fund. And then,
what's the conceptual difference between GiveWell and GiveWell Labs? Like, what is the break that you're making? Why did you put one thing under normal GiveWell and the other under GiveWell Labs?
GiveWell normal is the easiest way to put the break, and there's a lot of ways to put it. The easiest way to put the break is targeting the person who gives $1,000 versus targeting the major philanthropist. And so with the person who gives $1,000, that was our original target audience. No one was touching them. And we just said, how can we get your $1,000 to good things that will help people directly?
Okay.
And we were like, that's not what foundations do because it's not ambitious enough for them. But that's something individuals want to do because they don't have better options because they have nothing, right? GiveWell Labs is like, if we were a major philanthropist, how would we do things?
Okay. Got it.
And so we can do anything. We can create an organization. We can do a project, et cetera. And then there's also a personnel distinction. So, like, the vehicle stuff, the creating vehicles to do charity, that's, like, GiveWell staff as a whole is working on that because that fits into the work we've always done. And then, you know, the kind of the more, like, doing it totally differently is more, like, for now, it's, like, me leading that, and then we're going to try to get to the point where there's, you know, more people working on it. So the doing things totally differently is we feel like the biggest room for improvement in what foundations do is the first step, which is picking your program area. So if you go to the Hewlett Foundation website, you'll see that they have, like, environment, and they have arts and culture, and they have global development and population, and those program areas we think are picked in, like, pretty arbitrary ways. And then from there, they'll hire people to specialize in those and look all over the place and maybe do a decent job with that, or a great job, we don't know. And so we're wondering, could one improve on the process of systematically, analytically, deliberately picking the best program areas possible? And so the basic strategy we've taken so far is to, like, take two prongs. One, review the history of philanthropy and try to come up with principles that determine when philanthropy succeeds. What are good areas for philanthropy to intervene in? And two, examine the current state of philanthropy. What are the big foundations doing? What does the data on foundation activity say? and then you look for things that are underinvested in, you know, things that philanthropy seems like a good fit for philanthropy, but there's not much philanthropy in it. And so we've got a list of tentative causes. It's our hypothesis of where the most promising program areas are. We're going to publish that, and a lot of it is as kind of a, it's kind of like our first recommended charity ever. It was not the best bet, but it was a demonstration of how we were thinking about things. People engaged with it. We investigated it. We learned more over time. We got better at picking charities. It's the same with picking causes or program areas. So the tentative program areas we have, basic research, I think, is something that there's a lot of charity doing it, and especially disease research, there's a lot of charity doing it. But it's been, like, historically a really, really successful area for philanthropy. There's a lot of, like, developments that are attributed to it, and it makes a lot of sense. It kind of fits the, like, no one else is really well-positioned to do this test, except maybe, like, the government academia complex, but that's only one player. And so as philanthropy, you can come in and look for what they're missing. And so that's a very broad area. I'll move on for now to the second thing, because I'm investigating both at once. The second idea is meta-research, which is saying, instead of funding research that ought to be done, how can we change the workings of academia in order so that it does more of the research that ought to be done? And that's kind of a very ambitious idea, but so is, like, solving poverty, and that's a program area a lot of the time. And so the way that I'm kind of investigating both at once right now is it's, like, talking to academics about, that I will be, is talking to academics about what do you work on, what should you be working on, what should people be working on that they're not, and why aren't they, and what can we do about it? So meta-research is something we just don't see anyone working on, and we think it's an interesting cause. And I can explain why I think it has more potential than it might sound like. A third one is higher education reform. So this is just, the idea here is that the university is this one party, it works in this one way, and philanthropy doesn't seem to be, like, kind of looking for opportunities to intervene as much as it could to improve the way the university does its job. So half of that is research, half of that is education. So could one improve on the curriculum of higher education? And I think historically, philanthropy has done a lot of intervening in the curriculum of higher education. But today, you know, you don't see a lot of efforts to kind of step back and say, what should the curriculum look like and how could it be better? So that's a cause. Another cause, you're going to love this one, is global catastrophic risks. So those are just, like, things that could be really, really bad that have a low probability of happening. Nuclear war, climate change, artificial intelligence, for example. And the idea here is, you know, there's no real track record of this in philanthropy. On the other hand, it seems like every year this becomes a more major issue, and it largely hasn't been to date, but it could be in the future. It seems like there are... What?
I think that's a good cause. I think the artificial intelligence
okay, so I'm totally
angle,
with you.
But I'm not on
yeah.
the global...
Well, that's exactly what I believe, and the only question is it worth our time to explain why, and I think yes. Right, and so this is something where we think it's a good fit for philanthropy, or maybe. There's some reasons to think it's not. This one, we happen to have free labor, and this is where that importance comes in. There are people who are smart, who are passionate, who really care, who will work hard for free on this cause. They won't do any other cause. And so we're just advising them right now because we feel like that is a good way to investigate this cause. Like, they're doing the work, and they're doing it well, and we're advising. And then the final thing we're thinking about, but it's more of a long-term thing, is policy. You know, how could you intervene in policy? And that's a popular area for philanthropy, and the kind of motivating idea we have is that most people in policy pick an issue and fight as hard as they can on it instead of saying, what are all the issues? And if you multiply how important the issue is in humanitarian terms by how easy the fight is in, like, lobbying terms, then you rank them by that product. And that's a way of doing things that we don't see anyone else doing. We talk to people in the area. They think it sounds like a good idea. But we're very far from actually doing anything for a lot of reasons. And the main thing that we're, the action we're taking on policy right now is just learning more about how politics works and what the levers of change are. So the actions we're taking, I'm investigating basic research and meta-research. We're providing as much support as we can on co-funding. GiveWell as a whole is working on the top charities vehicles thing. We have, like, other people working on global catastrophic risks, as I mentioned. We're trying to learn about policy, but it's a side thing. It's not a huge focus of ours, and the other stuff is in the distance. But a major priority is writing up this case that I've just laid out verbally, writing it up with the data that we have and the information that we have, and putting it out there so people can engage with it, because the short-term goal is to just say, you could do philanthropy in a more deliberate, transparent way. You could pick your causes carefully and argue for why they're the best causes and the most underinvested in, and we don't see anyone else doing it, and we're going to do it, and everyone else come in and tell us what you think. So if you have other causes that we're overlooking, let me know.
Well, why? So when you look at that, what's the goal that you're trying to get at? Is it to change the foundations and the philanthropists, or are you actually, like, basically going to become one?
The thing we're doing is basically becoming one, except that we make recommendations instead of giving money. We'd love to change them. We'd love to just, you know, it's the same thing as we do with GiveWell Normal. It's like, we do this thing, we get money to the thing directly, and in the process, we're showing how it could be done in a more deliberate, systematic, thoughtful, transparent way, and if that influences people, fantastic. But we're not in.
But there's no lever there where we can, where we can incentivize the foundations directly to change.
I mean, they have no incentive. So it's like, it's, we just hope that they, that we get attention and that they care and that they consider this approach.
They do have an incentive around transparency. I just think they don't think it's true.
That's right.
And you I hope to also set an example around that.
Right. I mean, Carrie is starting a foundation, and I think it's going to be another example of how to do this. Like, I think their foundation is approaching things. Yeah, all right. Their foundation, I think, is largely got the same attitude. And, you know, in terms of being systematic, thoughtful, focusing only on doing the most good and being transparent about it. So that's, you know, that's hopefully going to be another demonstration. And
all right. Well, I'm going to have to leave. I'll tell you, my son Rex, was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which is a pretty big deal. And
yeah,
it's a good example of where the dealing with people's research is just so horrible in terms of just what is out there on something that, you know, I mean, has been happening forever and people don't know anything about it, about why it happens or what it is.
Interesting.
So
if you're trying to investigate these issues, we know a guy who, like, knows, he's like a biologist, and we think he's pretty smart. You can talk to him as well.
That might be helpful. Maybe pop it in and out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you note that later, should I? I'll note it.
But you're just having to deal with other people's analysis again. This is kind of the, I remember watching you guys doing this early on, and just the dealing with other people's analysis is just so unbelievable.
Yeah. There's actually, there's a group trying to work on this exact problem, and I have no idea if they will get anywhere.
On
medical research. Like summarize the medical research in a way that's just better. You know, just do it with integrity and accuracy. But they overlap heavily with your favorite people that we're talking about. So I don't know. I don't know what to say
about these people. I have a view on your the way you're describing them.
Okay. And your view is really positive.
Yes. All right. Thanks, guys. You're doing good work. I wish I could help you more.
See ya. Bye, guys.
Thanks.
Simply because of personal curiosity, I was not paying attention to what disease?
Diabetes.
Yes. I'm just going to turn this thing off.
Are we adjourned? Tom, you want to adjourn, and then if people want to chit-chat more, we can.
Well, I mean, are there other things that people want to talk about with the review?
I just the point that Tim raised earlier about preparing for growth, I just think that's the board point. That's all. I mean, it doesn't need to be addressed now, but...
Right. But I think we are. I mean, I think we're doing everything we can to raise that room for money moved in case things blow up, but also just because we want to. Obviously, I mean, I think if things go take a downturn, like, the only thing I want to be is as knowledgeable as possible and as transparent and honest as possible, and that's all we can do. And I think
I'm more concerned about the upside, really,
right.
and just having the managing the resources, because you're talking about having a pretty analyst intensive process, and you're talking about managing, you know, very intelligent, you know, high quality people, and having a process, and how you figure out a process that will allow them to do what they do, but at the same time maintain the standards of the organization. I think that's important.
We definitely, I mean, our number one priority is finding more places to put dollars that do good. So it's, you know.
And I think that's our number one priority, and a major risk is just doing real, like, lame, bad research. And so we're putting those two things together are our major focus. I think in past conversations, I think there's been concern among the board that we weren't putting enough time into outreach, and I think now we are aware of the risk that we're putting too much time into outreach, It's a difficult balance, but you know, that's certainly something we're thinking a lot about.
One of the questions related to growth seems like it would be, if you guys are two people still the primary managers of everybody working for you guys, and you can have at eight people, you've each got like four people that are working with you. If you, like the growth thing coming up that you do need to get ahead of, is like if you were to need to double next year in people, then you're starting to manage just a lot of people to handle. On the RAID principles, five people is about the appropriate amount or something like that. I don't know.
Well,
that's your, you're going to start bumping up against that if you don't have people that are.
I think we do have people that are, they can be, you know, taking on.
Can play like some of the role. Yeah. Like there's different aspects of managing at GiveWell. One of them is maintaining quality of research, and you know something that, you know, so that's like one thing, and we're having analysts play like some of that role amongst each other, you know, saying we don't need to be the first one to look at some piece of work and provide feedback. People can provide for each other, and that is something that hopefully develops people into a position where they can be the research managers. You know, and then also there are different, you know, there's different levels of degrees of difficulty for GiveWell work, and so we've done some things where, you know, on easier work that we have done by part-time people, like Natalie is the primary manager of that work with me checking. And so, you know, we are aware of that and trying to do what we can.
I remember talking about it in previous meetings and discussing it. We didn't talk at all about that.
So we're still at a place where, like, where Holden and I are doing most of the managing. I'm mostly the person who's the direct manager, though we're small. We talk about a lot of things. And, you know, if we grew to be 10, 11 people, it would be more of a challenge than it is now. And we'd have to figure out how to deal with it. And we're doing what we can now to try to create a situation where we would be able to deal with that well.
I mean, I think one of the things to be thinking about are those inflection points. And one of the, I think the Charity Navigator thing is an inflection point is, as you guys know, when the articles get written, Charity Navigator is who you pointed to.
So we've been gaining ground.
I know you've been
articles.
Gaining ground, but
right.
When you move more money than Charity Navigator is,
right.
There's a strong possibility that switches from 20% to 80%.
I think it's unlikely. I mean, I think I find it hard. I don't see the Charity Navigator thing as an inflection point. I just don't think people are looking at that number at all, ever. And, like, Charity Navigator makes a totally different claim about what their money moved figure is. That has nothing to do with their website because they have so many people to give offline. I mean, their number they claim is crazy. But clearly the number that goes to the website is a significant underestimate of, like, the people giving who have looked at their research.
Right. But, you know, we're talking about a large group of uninformed people who are writing the articles who are susceptible to just saying, well, Charity Navigator does this and GiveWell does more. So when I'm going to write my article, I'm going to ask GiveWell what they think. That attracts a lot of more people coming to the GiveWell site.
It might be something we could put out there in a way that then it would change people's minds.
Right, and I agree. It's not just going to instantly change something without you guys doing anything, but it is the potential, and there's the potential for that to change. So, assuming on the pessimistic side that there are just a limited number of charities that are ever going to pass the GiveWell test, and that you won't necessarily find them in time if we hit this one of the inflection points. What does GiveWell do if there's an influx of money beyond what you think the room for more money is from everybody you haven't done?
Right. So, I mean, what would we do? I don't know what we would do today with $50 million, you know, beyond the room. We'd probably tell people to hold on to it or put it in a donor advised fund while we do research. But the way in which we're preparing for the inflection point is working as hard as we can to find more opportunities that are great and have a lot of room for more money move.
What is your total room for more funding right now?
About $30 million.
That would be like a little conservative because that's like we're like these guys, you know, have room for at least this much.
Yeah, I mean,
given the growth rate, it's not infeasible that that's
no,
easier.
Yeah,
we
could.
The other thing we would do is something
if
really
that inflection point comes.
Right.
This is just, again, one of the things that I would expect you guys to be thinking about, not necessarily doing anything or devoting a lot of time. But if that inflection point comes, it's going to overwhelm your money move.
Sure.
Instantly.
Sure. We've thought about it. I mean, we had a conversation like what if something really happened and this year was like $100 million or whatever it is. And like I think there's pretty basic stuff we could do that would work pretty well. Like just one major thing is just to direct people to the like to emphasize the give to give well restricted for grants, which then just puts it in our hands, and then we can give it out when it makes sense to give it out. And I think, you know, at the point where we...
excess reserves policy?
Not if it's restricted. The excess reserves all based on operating stuff.
I'm not sure.
And also, I think we want to rewrite that policy anyway, or it may already say this, but the idea of the excess reserves policy, if we have excess reserves, the point is not to grant them out that minute. The point is to earmark them for regranting so that they're no longer available for our operations. So I think we want to be able to do that. Like if we got overwhelmed with money, which is like a really scary thought, I know, we want to be able to take the excess and just be like, this stuff is going to get granted out, and like any foundation, we'll grant it out when we're ready to grant it out.
This would be a great problem to have. I mean, it's
right.
Maybe it wouldn't.
And it doesn't seem that hard to deal with. Like, we would not, we have a good sense of the room for more money moved. We wouldn't let some charity just get, like, triple its gap. We would be watching that, and if we needed to change our website, we would do it.
Do you have a mechanism? I mean, let's say, like, you hit the inflection point this year. You wouldn't know until possibly the midday December 31st. Like,
no, we wouldn't know before then, I think.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, December 31st is huge, but it's always pretty – we've always been able to
somehow – really, like, giant dollars that make a big difference to the overall figure.
Right.
Like, people tell us about that before because it's a big deal for everybody,
right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the thing, right?
You have a huge amount of press and a lot of people give to you who aren't giving you big – look, chance of this happening is small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's good to bring
it's
up.
Right. And the other potential inflection point is the connections we're making in Silicon Valley, and it's just not out of the question that we're going to come across 15 other people who are going to give $3 million.
Right.
And
usually
now
someone who gives...
over our money moves
I mean, usually someone who gives $3 million...
I would be disappointed if we ended the year with the same money moves capacity, because a major goal for the year is identifying more capacity.
Agreed. But, you know, still... That is a plausible point where, you know, both things happen relatively close to each other. You attract a number of large donors because of the outreach that you're doing there, and something happens to attract a lot of small donors. So I don't think a good plan is telling people we don't have money moved. You know, we don't have capacity right now. Come back next year. It would be so give well, but I think we could probably do better than that.
I think better than that.
How can you do better than
give
or
give? Why are we meeting here?
I think the giving restricted idea, I think, is a better solution to that. And
well,
I think
that's what you would do. I mean,
I think it's a very reasonable solution. It's like, look, we don't know what to do right now, but if you give us money, you can take the tax deduction now, and we'll figure out what to do with it, and we won't use it for our operating expenses.
Or the donor advised fund. I mean, we don't
need
to go to
us.
People aren't
going
to do that, though.
Just
I don't think that's a good plan. Well, people just aren't going to do that.
No. If someone, say GiveWell went out of business tomorrow for some reason and there was money in the restricted fund.
Scenario planning.
What happens?
I'm just curious.
Our bylaws state that if we dissolve, that all our assets have to go to charity.
Yeah.
In line with our mission or something, and that can be.
So if that was well over the room for more funding, what would happen?
If we hit the inflection
people have drowned
crazy,
money.
A bad scenario, crazy
it.
Good scenario. Put them together.
No.
Not
what
even drowned
saying,
in money. Some donor decides to give unrestricted.
A huge amount of money.
Unrestricted money.
No, hold on. It's not a crazy question.
Without stealing the money.
Hold on.
If your contingency plan is to put money in a restricted fund and wait for the future results, in order to give that money, and in the meantime, because the whole premise of that is that you don't have enough room for more funding, and if GiveWell does not find any additional room for more funding, and you guys decide to dissolve,
we would just take our best guess. Like we would, in that point, I think we'd look for a person or organization that we trusted to do the right thing.
But realistically, what would happen if we, you know, got way too much money? We hit the inflection point. We make it restricted. Now you're in a position where people are really going to be seeking you out to you know more than before.
Right. It goes back to the grand, the original year.
Numbers. And if we're talking like, let's in a world where we had $100 million, like there'd be a lot of people like who would
retrying to demonstrate to us that they should have that. And
yeah.
Holden's like,
yeah, that seems like a good bounty for 2013. If you've got the $100 million bounty in 2013, you're going to need a couple more people doing research.
We have to manage some expectations right now.
You know, what the heck?
We're rich, I tell you.
So one other question that's on a completely different topic is,
is this the leprechaun scenario?
What?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I'd be interested in hearing your guys' assessment of the effectiveness of the board right now. Are you getting what you need? Are the structure of these board meetings still working? You know, we're not doing the monthly updates anymore. I don't get the sense that we need them, but, you know, do we have effective governance right now from the perspective of the leadership?
I think it's okay. I think it's acceptable. I also don't have a great sense of exactly what it is we should want from the board, and we've talked about this with you. So I think it's something that we actually is on our to-do list this year, is thinking about this issue. It's not a like major goal of the year because it's not going to take that much time, but it's something that we're continuing to think about and reflect on and think about what should a board be, what should we be getting from a board, and are we getting it. I think certainly right now we don't have a problem that's screaming out at us. You know, I think it's adequate, but I think we got to think about it more.
The two things that come to mind for me are there areas of expertise that you find you're going to need that you don't have?
Right.
And the other is, it really sounds, the more emergent thing, I think, is if you're getting more and more relationship with Silicon Valley donors, have more Silicon Valley representation on the board.
Right, and I think that's true. I mean, one thing that we found with GiveWell is, you know, a lot of our advisors, right, are happy to advise us, whether or not they're on the board. And that kind of, you know, a lot of our donors are happy to donate to our charities, whether or not they're on the board. So, you know, we look for people where it would make a difference, is one of the things we look for. Another thing we look for is, like, I don't know, we want the board to be someone who's holding accountable us to our mission. We want people who will do that. But, you know, should we be thinking about something else and more? And I think that's definitely on the agenda, and I think we're just going to have to talk about it and keep you guys updated.
I'd like to work with you guys a little bit on that. I have a governance expertise.
Okay.
There's a reference in the plan. By the way, I'm perfectly happy that we adjourned the meeting. We're just talking because now we're just waiting for the 9:40 train, right?
Yep. There's not an earlier train?
There's one at 8:34.
There's not. We can't make the earlier train. So.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Makes sense.
We're stuck. Together.
Can we adjourn the meeting, did we?
We can. Meeting's adjourned.
All right.